Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our special guest on Route 51 today is 29th District State Senator Jerry Petruski, Chair of the Senate Transportation, Public Safety, and Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, Vice Chair of the Senate Economic Development and Local Government Committee, and a member of the Senate Agriculture, Small Business, and Tourism Committee, the Senate Financial Institutions and Rural Issues Committee, and the Joint Legislative Council. Jerry Petruski has been a member of the state legislature since 1998 when he was elected to the Assembly. He joined the Senate in 2012 when he was elected in a recall election to fill the seat vacated by Pam Galloway. He was reelected to his first full four-year term in November by defeating Democrat Paul DeMain. Jerry has a background as a ginseng and beef farmer. He has been an advocate for agriculture interests in the legislature. As chair of the Transportation Committee, he pushed the successful amendment to the Wisconsin State Constitution that walled off the transportation fund and will keep it from being used for other purposes. Today we're going to talk to Senator Petruski about his priorities for the 29th District, his view of the bills that will emerge from the session of the state legislature that just got underway, and his reaction to Governor Walker's State of the State address. You can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Jerry Petruski, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Glenn.
What are your top priorities for this new session of the state legislature? What are the things you're working on right now?
Well, there's a whole list of ideas that are out there that, you know, we write down throughout the past session and the time during the summer and the whole campaign, things that people bring to you as ideas. A lot of the groups, the counties, the towns, the Heart Association, all of those things to indeed come up with legislation. The 17-year-old juvenile bill will be one of the things on the top of the list that we're trying to work out an agreement right now. Unlike some legislators that have an idea and they throw it out right away, I like to try to work and get everybody on board before I introduce the legislation. At least that.
So you're doing that behind the scenes right now with this juvenile offender bill.
Yeah. What we'd like to do is we'd like to get the county and everybody on board. So when we come in for a hearing, all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed.
Well, explain what the bill is.
The 17-year-old juvenile bill would take 17-year-olds, first-time offenders, nonviolent, that group of people that are 17 years old, out of the juvenile system and put them back, or out of the adult system and put them back in the juvenile system. It isn't going to be a lot of individuals, but they're going to be the low-cost ones. And the reason that we're looking at doing this is that those young people, if they go through the adult system, they're twice more likely to reoffend than if they were taken through the juvenile system.
Well, you have that stigma on your record for the rest of your life.
And that carries over on everything, whether it be getting a job, whether it be going on to school, whether it be getting a rental, an apartment, whatever. And, you know, sometimes young people do stupid things. And what we want to do is try to make sure that we give them every opportunity to be good citizens and be people that are contributing to the benefit of the whole state and that. And this is something that even Governor Thompson and Governor Doyle both agreed that should get changed back. There was a time when everybody wanted to be tough on crime. We had three strikes, you're out, truth in sentencing, a number of other initiatives. But the reality of this, I think we can help ourselves and we can help those young people.
Well, it's very expensive to put somebody in prison. And
it
is. So it's tough to be tough on crime and also be easy on the taxpayer at the same time.
You are correct, Glenn.
Republicans now control the Assembly and the Senate by even greater margins than before. You've got Scott Walker as governor. What opportunities does this alignment pose for you? What do you think you'll be able to get done in the next 4 years?
Well, I look at tackling a lot of issues, whether they be local government, whether they be agriculture. In the last session, I worked probably for 18 months on something called the Implements of Husbandry Bill. Now, I imagine a lot of people don't know what that is, but it readdressed all the weights and measures of all agricultural equipment, the width, the weight, the size, length, height, everything. And that hadn't been done for probably 40 years. And the equipment in the industry had just grown tremendously compared to what it was, say, 30 years ago. People had a little tractor, a 9N Ford or whatever, mm-hmm. and today they have something that's 20 times bigger and 20 times heavier.
So for those people who aren't farmers who are listening, how does this help them?
Well, the reality is the farmers legally couldn't be running on the roads with some of the equipment they had. So we did something with increasing the weight by 15%, which was already in place for an exemption, the fall harvest exemption. But this carries through year-round. We also put with it the requirements for lighting, because some of this equipment is so big, operating sometimes at night on the road, there has to be certain lighting requirements. We also put in the provisions that they have to have either a lead vehicle or a follow vehicle for some of the movement on the roads. We also put in place a permitting process at zero cost, but it's a permitting process through the state, through the county, mm-hmm. and through local government that enables them to even go heavier if indeed the local government is willing to give them the permission to do it.
So this is an example of the kind of nuts and bolts work that legislators do that it's not sexy, it doesn't get a lot of attention in the media, but it helps people.
And it isn't easy. You know, on this particular issue, we had like 20 different stakeholders. You know, every agricultural group, every local government, the counties, the towns, Department of Ag, Department of Transportation, the people that build big equipment, and to work out an agreement that everybody could live with, you know, is a challenge. And that challenge, like I say, it didn't happen overnight. I think a lot of people didn't believe that we could, you know, get it done.
But you were able to bring all of these sides together.
We were able to get it through.
Let's listen to a clip from the governor's State of the State address. Here he is talking about the state of the Wisconsin economy.
If you remember nothing else, remember this. More people are working while fewer are unemployed. State government is more effective, more efficient, and more accountable. And the state's financial condition has improved. Budgets are set based on the public's ability to pay instead of the government's hunger to spend. School scores are up and more students are graduating, and we are helping more of our fellow citizens transition from government dependence to work. The Wisconsin comeback is working.
There you hear Governor Walker with a very positive, optimistic interpretation of what's going on in Wisconsin. Now let's listen to a very different take on the economy in this response from Democratic Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse.
While Wisconsin leaders made deep cuts to education, local services, and worker training programs, Minnesota took a different approach and invested in local schools. They expanded access to affordable health care and they raised their minimum wage to encourage economic growth. As a result, Minnesota is outperforming Wisconsin in terms of job creation, business climate, and family income. And because of their growth, Minnesota has a $1 billion budget surplus, while Wisconsin faces a $2 billion deficit.
Jerry Petruski, how can we have such different views of the state of the economy in Wisconsin? I mean, once again, we not only have Republicans and Democrats differing in their opinions on the issues and policy recommendations for the future, they can't even agree on the facts.
Well, unfortunately, EOI's partisanship plays a role in all of this. And maybe the governor is looking for the best face to put on it, and, of course, the other side is looking for the worst. Are there good things happening, Glenn? Absolutely. Unemployment is at 5.2%, where it was over 9% at one time. I think you have to realize that there are some good things going on. Do we have some challenges ahead? Yes, we have challenges ahead. But the way to solve challenges is by people working together and pulling in the same direction. All the negative doesn't help. It doesn't solve any problems. It doesn't make the road better. You know, I always believe that if everybody tries to help a little bit, the road gets much smoother, regardless if it's in government or if it's in the local area with anything that's going on in your community. I think people need to put the rhetoric on hold and start working together to forge what needs to be done.
Katrina Shanklin, a Democrat from Stevens Point, put out a press release charging that under the governor, Wisconsin is dead last in the Midwest for job growth. Is that an accurate statistic?
I don't believe so. This came out during the campaign, and it was by one of the news agencies that ranked these things that it was in fact. But, you know, they take a certain segment of time and compare it to a different time. I think you have to look at it overall, and I think that's what they found out when they looked at this and ranked it as on the truth meter.
Is it wise for the governor to continue cutting taxes when we're facing a budget deficit?
Well, you know, everybody, I think, appreciates the fact that property taxes have come down. They're one of the most painful taxes that, you know, the citizens of Wisconsin face, and it always comes at Christmas time between that and New Year's, and it is painful because it's a large block of money.
It really hurts the elderly, too, who they don't have that income
No.
at that stage of life, but they get that property tax
and
bill.
And their income isn't changing very much, and the cost of prescription drugs are probably going up, and a lot of their other fixed costs are going up. So I think they really appreciate the fact that, you know, on an average, the property taxes came down dramatically. Is that good? Yes, of course it's good. Are there ways that we can save money out there? I believe there are. And you look for efficiencies in government. And, you know, is it worthwhile looking at places that you can reduce costs and reduce taxes? Absolutely. When people have more money in their pocket, they're probably going to spend it. They're going to invest. They're going to maybe buy kids things for their grandchildren. That's what drives our economy, and it drives the prosperity.
But property taxes are levied by and large by local governments and school districts. How much of that property tax relief was due to Act 10 and its curbs on public employee unions?
How much of it was due to
Act 10? Reducing the costs for local governments in terms of their union workers.
In this last tax bill for 2014, I think most of it came because of two things. One, the state bought down taxes with putting more money into the school aids formula, and by doing that, they had to reduce their levy. And they also did the same thing with the technical college. We gave more money to the tech, and they, by that, had to lower their levy on the taxpayer. So I don't think that really had anything to do with Act 10.
We mentioned that we were doing the show on Facebook, and we got a number of comments. Michelle from Racine asks, I'd like to know if Senator Petruski plans on supporting right to work when it comes up, especially since you've counted on union support throughout the years.
Well, I do have friends that are in the union, and right to work is going to be an issue. I will tell you that it isn't drafted yet, and they're looking for some form of it that they possibly will see in drafting. I haven't seen the bill yet, but my belief on this hasn't changed since we had talked here 3 or 6 months ago, whatever it was. I probably am not going to be supportive.
You're not going to support it?
Well, I haven't seen any draft of it, but that's what I'm looking at.
Would you support it if they, for instance, exempted trade unions specifically?
Well, that's one of the things they're looking at. I haven't seen the draft yet. I don't think they can.
The governor says that it's not a priority with him, but he hasn't said he would veto it. Do you think he should?
Well, that's going to be up to the governor. I think the one thing that you have to realize that if you're looking at bringing businesses to the state of Wisconsin, they want stability. They don't want labor unrest. Of course, they like lower taxes. But nobody has come to me from local government or from local businesses here and say, well, Jerry, we need right to work. We need Wisconsin to be a right to work state. I haven't gotten those calls.
Let's listen to another cut from the governor's State of the State address, this time on education.
Tonight, I call on members of the state legislature to pass legislation ensuring objective information is available for each and every school receiving public funds in the state. Provide the information and allow parents to make the choice. No need for bureaucrats or politicians to make that choice. I trust parents. I also call on the members of this legislature to pass legislation making it crystal clear that no school district in the state is required to use Common Core standards.
Jerry Petruski, big applause line for the governor. Where do you stand on Common Core standards? Does it make sense that school districts have the option to drop them if they want to?
Well, they have it now. That wasn't something that was put in by the legislature. That was something that was put in by DPI, and the local school district made that choice. So they have that option. Do I believe that giving options to parents and to school boards is a good idea? Absolutely. But if you're going to have something that you want to use as a comparison basis, some type of standard should be there. There have been some states that went ahead and threw out Common Core and then went ahead and adopted something that they called their own, but it was very much like it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the ACT and SAT scores and all that are based on Common Core, well, what needs to be part of that to give the students a fair shot at a fair comparison with students across the not only the state but the nation?
Well, those ACT and SAT scores are important if they're going to go on to
right,
the college.
Right, exactly.
If you just joined us, we are talking to Senator Jerry Petruski. He is a Republican senator representing the 29th Senate District. He was just elected to his first full four-year term in November after serving 2 years after winning a recall election. He is taking your phone calls live on the air. If you've got a question about what's going on in the state legislature or what you think should be a priority, give us a phone call, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our phone lines are wide open right now, and you can get in right away if you call right now. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Sean Johnson, who's our Capitol Hill reporter in Madison, wants me to ask this question. What do you want to see in a school accountability bill? And he asks, do you support a version that's been introduced by Senators Farrell and Olson, or do you want to see sanctions for public schools, in other words, turning persistently failing schools into independent charters?
Well, I don't believe the one that was introduced from the Assembly is the right answer. I really have a lot of faith in Luther, Senator Olson, and the version that he is working on. I think it makes some sense. There's probably a lot of changes that will happen along the line yet, but does there need to be some accountability? Yes, I think so. But I think if I haven't read Luther's bill, but he is probably the most knowledgeable person that deals with education that I have met.
What do you think of a bill with sanctions for public schools? What would that do to schools in the 29th district?
Well, I don't think we have many of the problems that are in the large urban areas like Milwaukee and that. So I'm not sure it would have a lot of effect here.
Let's see. We do have a phone call. We've got a call from Ed, who is on the road. Ed, you're on Route 51 with Jerry Petruski.
Well, thank you very much for connecting me. Senator Petruski, my last name is Polish, too, so I won't even try to have you learn it. But I work with special educators in about a 9-state region, and I just recently worked with folks from about a 5-state area on something called transitions to life. And the feedback that we received from special educators in those five states was that there's very little, if any, articulation or sharing between K-12 schools, 2- and 4-year colleges, and the workforce. In other words, there's this gap between each of them where there's replication of what's being done or nothing being done. And I wonder how the state could address that in a better, more organized fashion.
When you're saying sharing, what are you really looking for?
Well, I'm an old high school voc ed teacher years back.
Okay.
And many, many years ago, the state Department of Public Instruction had a group of us do something called an articulation project between high schools and 2-year colleges. Now, to go back to the 1970s, what's interesting is we spent about 2 years meeting with 2- and 4-year colleges and high schools to look at what we both did and where those skills or competencies should be taught. Nothing ever came out of it. What we're hearing now is we've got a ton of individuals who have skills and abilities, but they have limitations. They're special needs individuals that are struggling to get jobs that could help them support themselves. There's gaps between what they have for supports at the high school level and the 2 and 4 year colleges or employers.
Jerry,
we need articulation with all of those folks.
Jerry, what are your thoughts of this?
It's something I haven't really heard about. Certainly haven't read anything about it.
Maybe Ed should call your office and
if Ed has some ideas. If he can put the ideas down that he'd like to see brought up, I'd be willing to take a look at it. You know, a lot of times people, they talk about a problem. It helps if somebody can define the problem and define the possible solutions.
Ed, why don't you give Jerry a call or send him an email? You've piqued his interest, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Could you share Jerry's number at his office?
Sure.
That's the easiest for me because I am on the road a lot.
Okay. 608-266-2502.
266-2502?
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ed.
Ed, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Senator Jerry Petruski, that's 1-800-780-9742. Should we be expanding the private school voucher program, Jerry, in the state? And if it's good for Milwaukee, why isn't it good for the rest of the state?
Well, it is statewide. The voucher program is statewide, but it's limited to 500
slots. But I'm talking about expanding it.
We don't have any money right now. We are looking at a shortfall in the budget. We are looking at a shortfall in transportation that has been around for a long time. So, you know, until we solve those problems, the expansion is somewhat on hold. Is there room for expansion? I can tell you there are a lot of people that have their sons and daughters in parochial education that would like to see that program expanded. But like everything else, the state has to have the money.
Let's listen to another cut from the governor's State of the State address where he talks about challenging the Environmental Protection Agency's proposed new rules on carbon emissions.
Top-down regulations and mandates from the federal government can get in the way of innovation and growth in Wisconsin and states like ours. Therefore, I'm working with our new Attorney General to prepare a lawsuit challenging the newly proposed federal energy regulations. These proposals could have a devastating impact on Wisconsin, because we are so heavily dependent on manufacturing. According to recent reports, we could lose tens of thousands of jobs in our region, and the ratepayers could see an increase of up to 29%. We will fight to protect Wisconsin's hardworking families.
And we got a press release from Republican Senator Tom Tiffany, who said that he was most encouraged by Governor Walker filing that suit and pushing back against federal policies that he says will cause electrical rates to rise and discourage manufacturers from locating in Wisconsin. Jerry Petruski, what's your take on it?
Well, you know that a lot of electricity generated in Wisconsin is because of the burning of coal. And coal is probably one of the cheapest ways to generate fuel. I'm sure that nobody here wants to see their electric bills go up 29%, is what the governor talked about. That would be huge. Would it be a deterrent for businesses to move here? Absolutely. And I think you need to look even farther. The coal burning in the state has come a long, long way with technology to make the environment cleaner. Is there more that could be done yet? I don't really know. But any drastic change like that could be devastating to Wisconsin. It could be devastating to businesses here. And it could be devastating to the jobs that are here.
Are we doing enough for renewable energy in Wisconsin? Iowa, for instance, has become a national leader in wind energy. They now generate 27% of the state's electricity from wind power. Some statistics in Wisconsin, there were 215 commercial wind turbines built in 2008. It was down to only 10 by 2012, and there have been none since then. Solar energy has been flatlined in the state, according to some critics. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but should we be doing more?
Well, a lot of it is going to be dependent on the environment you have. Do you have an area in Wisconsin where the wind is somewhat steady that you can generate enough electricity with wind turbines? Wisconsin isn't known for being the best place to have that.
But if it's working in Iowa, why wouldn't it work here?
Maybe Iowa has a better wind supply than we do here.
They're right next door.
I know that there's a lot of hot air sometimes, but, you know, and that's the things that generate. How do you have a return on investment? And that's the thing that follows through with the solar panels and everything else. Will one day they be commonplace? I believe they will, because technology will come that far. It's just like the electric cars that we're looking at now. Is that, we have them right now, is it something for the future? Absolutely, because they will become more and more efficient. They will be made better to last longer, to run cheaper. That's what happens. Look at the normal combustible engine. When I was young, you had a car that got 9 and 10 miles to the gallon. Right now, we're looking at 32 to 45, sometimes even over 50 miles to the gallon. That's the norm. That also has caused some other problems, like funding transportation in the state. When you depend so much on gas tax and all of a sudden everybody starts burning half as much gas, well, that creates another problem. How do we gain enough revenue to make sure that our roads are repaired, that there's enough salt for plowing and everything for the wintertime?
Jerry Petruski, he's with us for the next half hour. And if you would like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be talking about transportation issues and just about everything else under the sun when we come back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from our contributing members, including the growing number of sustaining members who make ongoing monthly gifts. Thanks to your reliable support, thoughtful programs have a secure home on WPR. Thank you. Support also comes from Wausau's Woods and Art Museum, where 50 greatest National Geographic photographs features images and stories from the magazine's 120-year history through February 22nd, lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Senator Jerry Petruski is our guest today, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, that's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Ray in Rhinelander. Ray, you're on Route 51 with Jerry Petruski.
And thank you. And thank you, Jerry, for being on. I have two interests and questions related to this. One is, everybody doesn't want their property taxes to go up. We all know people get alarmed, they get freaked out, and then they don't want to vote for anything, then everything just seems to compile on that. That is a big problem. We all agree, whether we're Democrat, Republican, that needs to be straightened out. Okay, so what do we do about the taxation system? Do we have a use tax? Will you use whatever you use, you pay more tax for? What tax area do we need to restructure to help Wisconsin with this so the property taxes aren't overburdened? Plus, central Wisconsin was one of the biggest manufactured producers in the upper Midwest, known around the United States. Wausau was number one best city for years. Between those two subjects, what do you think, and be a little specific if you can, where we can bring this up to date to get somewhat back on track? And Ray, I'll take the comment off air, and thank you for being on.
Ray, thanks so much for the comments. Let's hit taxes first. Do we need substitutes for the property taxes? And then let's go on to manufacturing.
Well, I have actually looked at looking for a way to get the K-12, the schools, off the property tax, because that would be huge. Your property taxes would be probably cut in half. The problem is coming up with the billions of dollars you would need. Now, where do you, you know, start? Maybe what could be done is you could have a separate fund to fund schools and either, you know, use more sales tax, maybe put into that fund all the gaming revenue, have a segregated fund that would be just set aside for that. Because I think, out of all the taxes, the property taxes are the most painful.
And also manufacturing. How do we get to a point where we are once again a leader in manufacturing in central Wisconsin? How do we move into new areas?
Well, I think part of it is the things we're doing. We're investing money into that fast forward to get people trained at the tech to fill those needs that manufacturing has. I actually, about a year and a half ago now, I think it was, a guy called up and said, you know, Jerry, I'd like to move a business to Wausau. I need 150 welders. But there are just not 150 welders there for me to employ.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem goes even deeper than that, because if you look at a lot of the big businesses that are here, whether it be JARP, Greeneck, Shooting Metals, they have a lot of welders. But they have a lot of welders that are also at the kind of the close to retirement age. And the next 5 years, you're going to see a lot of those people leave work and retire, and we don't have the welders to replace them. And that's why it's such a priority that the tech expanded their welding program and is out there training welders, because you can get a good job welding. You know, granted, it isn't for everybody. Not everybody likes being under the helmet and welding, but the welders of today are much different than the stick welders of years ago. And right now, I'm surprised because the number of female welders that have gotten involved and actually are making a living doing it is unbelievable. And they do a great job. They're probably a little more steady than a.
Both of us worked in factories when we were younger. And 30 years ago, when I was a welder and you were working in a foundry, you didn't see that.
No, you really didn't. I'd like to think that we're still young, Glenn. You know.
The governor also recommended consolidating certain departments in order to save money. Where do you stand on that?
Well, he talked about two things. One was the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and combining that with the Wisconsin Economic Development Authority. I think that makes some sense because they kind of go hand in hand with the housing and the development and things that are going on. But he talked about something else with financial institutions. And I believe what we have in financial institutions, and I'm not sure because it was kind of general information, he didn't get really specific, but we have a commissioner that deals with the banking issues and we have a commissioner that deals with credit unions. Now, I'm not sure it would be good to combine those, and I probably would not be supportive of that.
I want to play a short clip from the debate that you did right here in this building in late October with your opponent from the Democratic Party, Paul DeMain, not because I want to relive the debate, but because some of these issues still haven't been resolved. This is something that's pretty controversial and very important to a lot of people in the district and in northern Wisconsin, the proposal for an iron ore mine in the Pinoki Hills region in Ashland and Iron Counties.
It's under the oversight of the EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Wisconsin DNR. And if that mine cannot be built and run safely, then it should not happen. And I believe it can. We've been mining in this country for a long time, in this state for a long time, and I believe that we can have a mine that will produce jobs, that will produce commerce, and one that we really will benefit the whole state.
Paul DeMain, you have 90 seconds.
Yes, this is one of the issues that got me into considering running for office, because I thought the process, or the lack of the process, is one of the most disrespectful, distasteful processes that I've ever seen, in which the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers wasn't even invited to the hearings on the bill, in which tribal chairmen and elected leaders were told they had 2 minutes to speak, and when little egg ringer went off, were shooed off the stand because it was almost like things were predestined.
Jerry Petruski, Paul DeMain seemed even more upset by the perceived slight that he saw to tribal leaders during those hearings than about the mine itself.
Well, Glenn, I wasn't on that committee and I wasn't at the hearing. I do know that, you know, the northern part of the state, what are the opportunities that are there? You look, yes, there's some agriculture depending on how far north you go. There is tourism, of course, with, you know, a whole variety of things, whether it be summer fishing or snowmobiling and everything else in the wintertime. You have, some manufacturing, but not a lot. You have some mining, but not a lot. Timber is probably the mainstay of northern Wisconsin. And yet with our national forest and our ability to manage those forests, because it's being done right now by the federal government, we could help ourselves if we can do more in forestry. Other than that, this mine could be really something important for a lot of families. There's going to be probably 50 years of jobs there,
mm-hmm.
good paying jobs. You know, mining has been around for a long time. It isn't something new. This isn't the kind of mining that they're looking at using chemicals to sort out minerals, sulfite mining like they used to call it. This is something where they're basically going in, excavating out material and running it through some type of crusher and taking a magnet and picking up whatever is metallic and putting it on the freight car or whatever. It isn't. The problem we ran into in a lot of the sulfite mining was doing something with the wastewater and that was coming off. This doesn't have that problem. Are there still some other problems? I think any time you're doing anything that massive, you know, there are some problems. But there were precautions taken during some of the amendments that were added in the hearings that went on. And I think we can do it safely, and it'll be up to the oversight of the EPA, the DNR, and the Army Corps of Engineers to look at this.
The tribes say they're going to challenge it in court. Do you think we'll see it built in the next 4 years during your term?
You know, I don't know. I don't know where they are in the process right now with the studies that they have to do and the permitting process. 4 years in the scope of a mine probably is a short time. I have not heard anything in the last 6 months as far as any update on where they're coming or how far they've gone.
What can the state do to mend some of the sore feelings that, for one reason or another, these tribal leaders seem to have with the way they perceive they're being treated by the power structure in Madison?
Well, I don't know. There is a committee that the tribes participate in. There is also, I believe there's still that committee around. I know there always was before I wasn't on it. We always have a day of the state of the tribes where they come and address both houses of the legislature. I think it's like everything else. You know, the relationships are built over time. They're built by individuals, and they're built by legislators. And I know that when I first got elected to the Senate, I went up and sat down with the tribal government up in Hayward.
Which is where Paul DeMaine is from.
Well, that's where he lives. I think he's actually a member of a different tribe, but I think he lives there, yes. Just to hear what their outlook was and the things that they wanted to work on. We've done a number of things as far as sharing with game wardens across, mm-hmm. you know, tribal lines, law enforcement working together, you know, a lot of things like
that. There are cultural differences that affect a lot of different things, everything from the wolf hunt to walleye fishing to...
They feel strongly about the wolf hunt, yes.
Yeah.
And that's on hold now because of a federal judge.
Let's take a short break. We've got a lot of things that I want to get to in the last segment. We are talking to Jerry Petruski, 29th State Senate District, who is entering his first full four-year term. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to him. That's 1-800-780-9742.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, University Bookstore, and the Oneida Tribe of Indians of Wisconsin. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
Our guest today on Route 51 is Jerry Petruski, State Senator from the 29th Senate District, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation. On our Facebook page, Jim from Wausau asks, what is the potential for any state assistance with the Brokaw situation? Here's the background for those of you who aren't familiar with it. The village of Brokaw hit hard by the loss of the Wausau paper mill. Now a consultant's report says it has two options, dissolve or disincorporate, which will saddle the adjacent towns of Maine and Texas with millions of dollars of debt, or annexed to Wausau, which is impossible now because there are no shared boundaries. Here's what Marathon County Administrator Brad Carger told me yesterday.
There's really only two courses of action. One is disincorporation. That doesn't solve any problems. It moves them. The only other alternative is a cooperative agreement, which must include Wausau. It would ultimately result in annexation. The barrier to that is that Brokaw and WASA are not contiguous. Our consultants were very clear. You do not have time to ponder this. The time for action is yesterday. This is a problem that can only be resolved with regional cooperation. If you get the regional cooperation, my guess is there's a good opportunity to get some state relief. Without it, you won't. It's going to be very important that four communities who have limited experience cooperating really go from limited experience to the master's degree level fast.
That's Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger, who says there's an opportunity, he thinks, for state relief if we can get these four communities to cooperate. Jerry Petruski, is that true?
Well, first of all, the two options that were listed in the study that was done, yes, have one going through dissolution, which they would take that problem and shift it to the two townships that used to make up Brokaw. The other one is to have the city in some form or fashion do an agreement, whether it's buying out the water utility portion of it and taking that over. But the city can't annex a village. There could be some mutual agreement, I believe, in the making. If the gentleman that was calling in is looking for a buyout from the state so that the state would come up and pay off the bills that Brokaw presently has, that becomes a very tough sell.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get another 132 people to agree to put state resources into doing this? Because it opens the door. You'd have all kinds of communities across the state saying the same thing. Oh, we need help, so give us so many millions of dollars. So I don't think that that's viable in the future. Is there some possibility that something could happen or be done? I think the first step in this road is for the village has to decide what they want to do. And I think the administrator, Mr. Karger, is right. The choices, they need to come to an agreement among the members of the board on what's the goal. You know, you can never get in to any place if you don't have a map on how to get to where you want to go. But you have to establish where you want to go.
It's got to start with the village.
It has to start with the village. And they have to make the decision that, you know, what we're doing right now isn't going to change. We need to move on, whether it be sitting down with WASA and saying what are the possibilities of WASA taking over Brokaw. And also along with that, you know, the dealing with the utility, with the water and sewer.
Well, that's got to be the first step, according to what the consultant said. They got to deal with that, and then maybe annexation, if they can find a way to get there, and if it's in Wausau's interest to do it.
And, you know, I know that they have a water line going out there. If that would work as to constitute being contiguous, I know that the town of Maine wouldn't be happy with that. Because it runs, you know, right through the...
But the town of Maine won't be happy with millions of dollars in additional debt being put on the shoulders of their property tax.
And right now, Glenn, those are the options in statute that are available to Brokaw.
Let's move to another local issue that we may have some state solutions to. Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald wanted me to ask this question. What's the possibility of a legislation to allow regional transit authorities? This, of course, in reference to the fact that the Village of Weston has opted out of the regional bus service in Wausau, which has severely limited that service.
Yes. Tough issue, tough problem. I actually, in the end of October, I went and I rode the K-Line, and just to see who was riding it and how many people and whatever. And there is a definite need. Now, having said that, I will tell you that the Senate passed an RTA provision last session. It was not taken up by the Assembly. It was a bill from Senator Ellis. And I actually reworked the bill so we could get the support to pass it from our House. I have not had the conversation yet with the members of the Assembly, mainly the Speaker, and it's something I intend to have that discussion. Periodically, I'd like to sit down with Speaker Voss and talk about, you know, a variety of issues that are coming to the forefront.
So there's a possibility, but it's going to take some work.
It's going to take some work.
Jim from Wausau asks, what about the Republican attempt to oust Supreme Court Chief Justice Shirley Abramson from the Wisconsin Supreme Court by introducing legislation on how the Chief Justice is selected, as well as attempts to require a mandatory retirement age? Would you support that legislation?
I don't think the mandatory retirement age is something that will pass. The constitutional amendment to allow the justices to elect their own Chief Justice, I think that's reasonable. I have voted for it in the last session. It will be coming up again this session, and it will go to the voters, I believe, sometime this year. We do that in the legislature. It is a vote to elect the majority leader, to elect the speaker in the other house, and I don't know why we would do something different in the Supreme Court.
And Robert Burke, who ran for governor as a libertarian, had a reaction to the state of the state address, and he mentioned something that I found interesting. He said what's missing from the governor's speech was any mention of the carnage that he says is setting in for Wisconsin's frac sand industry. The industry rode the shale oil boom, and while Wisconsin is enjoying less expensive energy, I fear this industry downturn will hit our rural communities very hard. There are good-paying jobs that supported these areas, and as the shale industry goes, so shall Wisconsin frac sand and the surrounding economies. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's certainly going to have an effect. If they quit, curtail some of their operations over in Colorado, will it have an effect? They won't be buying as much frac sand. Will that have an effect on the economy here? Absolutely. But I can tell you right now that everybody is enjoying the low gas price. And I filled up last night on my way home from Madison, and it was $1.95 a gallon. So the bill was $27.40 or something, much better than paying $50. And a lot of the people, I think we're on the edge of really seeing our economy taking off, because $2 a gallon gasoline puts a lot more money in the hands of the consumer. In turn, they're going to spend it, and that will drive the economy. And I don't think it's going to change in the short term. I think we're going to see this, you know, minimally for 9 months where we have low gas prices.
You successfully pushed for that amendment to the state constitution.
Correct.
That kept the transportation fund from being raided by other areas. Is transportation out of the woods now, or do you still have challenges?
No, we're going to have a lot of challenges in transportation. The main thing why I worked on that constitutional amendment to make sure that money wasn't diverted from transportation for other purposes is because so much of it happened in the years past. I don't want to sit here and blame everything on Governor Doyle, but a lot of money was moved from transportation into other areas. And what it does is now we're looking at a shortfall, and how do we fill that gap? And a lot of people were looking at it and say, well, Jerry, why should we put more money in transportation if it's just going to be taken off and used for some other purpose?
Right.
You know, it's just like the doctor's fund, the patient's compensation fund that was raided years back. That's another issue. That fund needs to be protected.
But this was
transportation.
We're running short on time, so I want to see what the options are. Would you favor a gas tax since gas prices are so low right now, or is there some other way to
I think there's a couple things that you start with. First, you figure out exactly what you need, and I don't believe that you can solve this problem completely in one budget cycle. So you divide it kind of up between two budget cycles. I would personally, and this is something I recommended probably 8 years ago, is to designate more of that sales tax revenue from auto and auto-related parts. That seems like a normal fit for transportation, and that would take us partway to a solution. Beyond that, I think I would look at making the department go ahead and find efficiencies within the Department of Transportation. And I can give you some, you know, ideas. A lot of times we're out surveying for roadways that aren't built for the, 30 years out. And by the time we end up building, they're doing more serving. So let's look at places that we can save money within the department and in the inner workings of the department and force that issue along with that for savings.
Jerry, any final thoughts? We've got just 15 seconds.
Well, there's a lot of things on the agenda, on my agenda. I work on a lot of policy. Yes, I do a lot of transportation. I do some ag. I do some local government. But you know, it's helpful for me to have people define a problem that they believe is there and possible solutions. And together, a lot of times, we can work to find those solutions.
We want to thank today's guest, 29th District State Senator Jerry Petruski. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week on Route 51, we focus on Alzheimer's and efforts to create dementia-friendly communities. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and if you miss part of this show, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, until next week.